Some firms call it the future, others call it a necessary evil. But whatever you call it, offshoring, outsourcing, it's no longer the fringe strategy in the accounting world. It's the firmly part of the playbook, business as usual. Everybody's doing it. And the latest IPA data shows that they're not just here to stay. This phenomenon is accelerating. Welcome to the Inside Public Accounting podcast, where we bring you the numbers, the narratives, and the future of the profession into focus. I'm Rob Brown, one of your hosts and your guide to the voices shaping public accounting. And I'm delighted to have my co-host with me. Welcome, Chelsea Summers.
Hi, I'm Chelsea Summers, Executive Director of Inside Public Accounting. Each week, we turn IPA's exclusive data and research into real-world insights, going beyond the rankings to explore the trends, the challenges, and the strategies that are really helping to shape the future of the profession. The numbers behind the narratives this year paint a pretty clear picture. More firms are sending work outside of their walls, whether that means hiring full-time offshore staff, using third-party providers, or outsourcing specialized work like tax prep.
It's such a great topic, Chelsea, because you and I both know that a few years ago, it was treated with a little bit of disdain. People didn't understand it. It was a dark, mysterious thing. It was going to be the downfall for accounting firms. It was the beginning of the end, but things are really changing. So give us the headline here. Who's actually doing this and how much work is being outsourced?
Across all firms in our survey, 47% reported using offshore staff in 2025. That's an increase from about 43% last year. And when they do it, they're starting to do it at scale. The average firm is outsourcing 13.6 full-time equivalents or FTEs, but that number is exploding when you look at the largest firms. For those firms over $150 million in revenue, they average 170 offshore FTEs, and they're outsourcing about 2,500 tax returns each year.
That's me. And the great thing about what you do at the Inside Public Accounting outfit is you look longitudinally, so you can see the trends over the year. So what does that tell us when we compare year on year? What's driving what I presume is an upturned graph?
Yeah. They're up in nearly all of the revenue bands that we looked at, especially among the larger firms. The big drivers are still the capacity constraints and labor shortages, especially for the experienced CPA and audit roles. It's just so hard to fill every seat right now domestically. So firms are using the offshoring programs as a permanent solution rather than just those seasonal patches.
And we've done some stuff on private equity, Chelsea, a lot, in fact, because it's such a disruptor and so prevalent in the accounting world. Private equity injects a lot of money into firms. I'm just wondering, are they driving that into outsource and offshore options? So tell us about the big players leading the charge here. Are they pre-backed? What's going on?
Those bigger firms certainly have the infrastructure to move quickly.
Infrastructure, right.
Firms of all sizes are making outsourcing work for them. The mid-sized firms in that $50 to $75 million range are moving fast. And even smaller firms are starting to discover that outsourcing doesn't have to mean hundreds of tax returns or hundreds of staff. It could be a single specialist for a few months or a part-time role that frees up their partners to focus on growth. The beauty of outsourcing now is that it's more flexible and more customizable than ever. So you could scale it to your needs, not just somebody else's model.
So private equity is not really a driver here. It's happening across the board.
Across all sizes, all firms, certainly more prevalent in those larger firms, but it's not just being driven by those PE-backed firms.
Yeah. Now, women keep telling us that size doesn't matter, but I'm just wondering, the bigger firms, Chelsea, are they getting the bigger benefits because they can scale, can't they?
Yes, absolutely. They certainly are leading the charge, like I said, with more tax returns being outsourced and more offshore staff in their firms.
Okay, so we're looking at the now. Tell us about future. Is this leveling off or is it going to gain even more momentum, Chelsea?
It's definitely expanding. Our data shows that about 63% of outsourcing firms plan to increase next year, and fewer than 4% are planning to decrease their programs. At the top end, those largest $150 million plus firms, 93% said they're going to be doing more next year.
That's a massive commitment. That's almost all firms. Accountants are in the business of risk mitigation. They don't do things half-hearted. They will investigate it, do all the due diligence. I'm thinking there must be some risks or downside or some hesitation.
Yeah, security and client perception really remain the two biggest risks.
Yeah.
That's why you're seeing firms doing more investments in SOC 2 compliance. They're looking at secure file sharing, and they're doing a lot of proactive client communications. Some are shifting towards nearshore or even domestic contracting talent to ease some of those concerns with clients.
What about the people side of it? I imagine outsourcing obviously affects the client conversation, but it affects the employees, the team, the staff too.
It does. For some firms, outsourcing actually reduces the burnout because it takes the late night grind off their in-house teams. Mm-hmm. Struggle. They have a two-team dynamic, and integrating offshore staff in the culture, ensuring that they are aligned on quality, and making sure those domestic employees don't feel like the opportunities for them are shrinking. Some firms are being really intentional about creating either joint training or cross-location project teams, even sometimes inviting those offshore staff to firm retreats or virtual social events.
Yeah. So it's less about replacing people, but more about recalibrating, rebalancing the workload.
Right. And those most successful firms that we see, they're positioning their outsourcing as an opportunity for domestic staff to move into the more higher value client-facing work. Yeah. When communicated well internally, it can improve career paths, not limit them.
And that's such a great argument for the advisory conversation, isn't it? Because this downward pressure on compliance fees, that historical stuff's been less valued by clients. So I can see it would present a lot of opportunity. Let's think externally, Chelsea. How do firms talk to clients about the fact that they are outsourcing and offshoring without raising eyebrows? Maybe some firms don't mention it.
Yeah, I think they're mentioning it, but I think the leading firms, they're transparent, but they're being strategic about those communications. Okay. They're focusing really outcome-based. There's faster turnaround, more year-round capacity, and expanded service lines. They explain that the security measures, sometimes even giving clients like virtual tours of their offshore facilities, they're making sure that the client knows the relationship manager isn't changing, the outsourcing is supporting this team, it doesn't replace it.
I love that. So the couching it, if you like, in a value to the client vocabulary. They're saying, look, we're doing this, but it's good for you because.
Yes, they want the whole, not the drill.
Yeah. And Chelsea, just to clarify on terms, we often interchange outsourcing and offshoring. What's your take on the difference?
Yeah. For Inside Public Accounting, we talk about offshoring as those people, the people that are either in another location, employed by a third party, or employed by your firm in another overseas location. And we use the term outsourcing as tax return, project-based work, those one-off projects and not a person. So
offshoring your team, your brand, your t-shirts, your logo, your business card, those kind of things, they're very much part of your firm, aren't they?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to be successful, it should be.
So let's go crystal ball. You're very good at projecting into the future. What's next for outsourcing in public accounting?
In the next 3 to 5 years, I think we're going to see outsourcing move beyond just basic tax preparation and audit work, and really move into some more specialized roles, whether that's ESG reporting or forensic accounting, even advisory support. Technology is going to make these collaborations be a lot more seamless, and AI will blend the human offshore work to handle complex, high-volume tasks. I also think nearshoring in areas like Latin America or even in the United States will grow as firms are looking for work in similar time zones. Perhaps the biggest shift I think we're going to see is it's not going to feel like outsourcing or offshoring anymore. It's going to feel like a normal integrated part of the operations.
And just an example of the same time zones. In the UK, we're sourcing a lot more to South Africa, which is on our time zone. And I'm hearing Argentina is opening up for the US market because, again, similar time zones. And one thing's for sure, we're losing the stigma of outsourcing, aren't we? It's becoming much more acceptable and even necessary.
Yeah. And as more firms, like I said, you know, nearly half of the firms are utilizing this, it's becoming more commonplace and firms are starting to tweak those strategies instead of just investing, let's see how it goes. They're saying this is working, let's do more of it and let's do it more efficiently.
Yeah. And we're seeing that blur, aren't we, between inside the firm and outside the firm.
Exactly. And for the firms that get this melding right, it's going to be a real competitive advantage for them.
So if we look ahead to your research and what you're going to be asking for outsourcing and offshoring over the next few years, is this throwing up any more questions just so that you want to know about that you'll be asking firms?
Yeah. One of the big changes as it's becoming more common is just how firms are utilizing these staff and how it's changing their KPIs, how the metrics that they're looking at are shifting and changing, and the benchmarks we used to say, revenue per employee or personnel cost, how those are shifting because of all the offshore staff. Something we're keeping our eye on and something we're constantly moving the dials on as firms are getting more sophisticated with their sourcing programs and offshoring programs and their data tracking mechanisms. We're trying to be more sophisticated in that tracking as well.
That's brilliant angles. I'm really excited about those. As we come to a close, we do invite our viewers, listeners, wherever you're watching, tuning in, to submit questions. We talk about such a lot of great topics here. Chelsea brings you the insights, and we are open to your queries. We've got one here. They don't often come in with a name, but let's give a shout out to Daryl Petrick. He's, if you don't know him, the accounting chair of the Alliant Global Alliance. And he asked this question, Chelsea, very on topic. One of the things that our alliance is trying to do is gain a foothold in allowing independent firms to align with our private equity for training, for succession planning, for strategic thinking. Do you think that's a worthy goal? And what is the role of an alliance in the modern era?
I think it is absolutely a worthy goal. And I would probably go further to say that the role of alliances is more valuable now than at any point in recent memory. As outsourcing and other transformations begin to accelerate, independent firms are facing some challenges. Keeping pace with operational innovation and staying competitive in marketplaces where scale is really starting to matter. Alliances are giving them a way to do both without having to sell to private equity or merge into a larger firm. What I'm seeing and what the IPA data is seeing is that alliances are evolving beyond just networking functions. They're really starting to become platforms for shared infrastructure, joint training programs, pooling resources for technology investments, even collaboration on staffing models. It's just a huge shift from where they were a decade ago. It's not about just the efficiency. It's also about the strategy, which is a word I feel like keeps coming up in these last couple months. Strong alliances can help small and mid-sized firms offer clients broader geographic reach, access to niche expertise, and even a deeper bench of talent. It also gives firms forums for succession planning or leadership development, strategic thinking, all areas where pressure is really starting to grow in the next 5 years. I think the beauty is that alliances can help level the playing field the same way a $150 million firm can integrate outsourcing into its operations at such scale. A $10 million firm in the right alliance can tap into those collective and collaborative resources. They can implement best practices and deliver client experience that really rivals much larger companies. Today's environment where clients care about responsiveness, expertise, and trust, it's a powerful advantage. So I think it is a worthy goal. And I think the associations that embrace this expanded role are going to be a critical force in really shaping the next chapter of the accounting profession.
That's such an insightful answer. And I love your example that you gave of the way a $10 million firm can act like a $150 million firm. Yes, with an alliance, with relationships, but also outsourcing and offshoring. That's going to increase the capacity for those firms. So that's a great answer. And to you, Daryl, I thank you for the question. This is not a time to be isolated as a firm. There is so much going on. So any strategic partnerships and alliances, networks, associations you can get involved with, that is really going to help you. Another question here coming in, Chelsea, and you can jump on our LinkedIn company page or anywhere you find the podcast, reach out to insidepublicaccounting.com. This is for firms under $10 million. Mm-hmm. I could answer this question too. How do you build a reputation as the go-to in a niche without the big marketing budget of the big firms?
Why don't you take this one?
Well, I'm just thinking, if you're a Nike or a Coca-Cola or a insert your own great big brand there, you've got billions to throw at marketing and visibility, and you pay for traffic and you pay for a presence everywhere. If you're into it, you can advertise at the Super Bowl for $8 million or whatever it is. So obviously budget counts. I think one of the ways to do it these days, and we'll get your answer too, but people seem to trust people more than they do brands. They're very suspicious of brands, particularly the big corporate brands. So if you are a smaller firm, you've got personalities, you've got people, you've got character, you've got stories to tell. And using personal brands and people to amplify your messages and key stories, obviously it puts an onus on the owners and the partners and the leaders in there to get out there and comment on things more and have more of a personal brand and raise their profile and be more vocal and visible. So you've got to create a bit of content. You might have to turn your webcam on. You might have to have an opinion. You might have to care a little bit less that you haven't got millions of followers or you're not getting tons of engagement, because sure, there's a risk there. But I do feel people are drawn to firms that have personalities and have opinions and can show their expertise, because people buy people. So that's my angle on that. What about you?
Yes, yes to all of that. I think the firms that are doing these niche services well, they're identifying their specific audience, and then they're doing the work to understand that audience's needs, their language, their pain points, they're using that expertise. They're speaking at industry events, publishing the thought leadership, turning their webcams on. They're being active in trade associations or their networks and making sure that the client interactions are really reinforcing that focus. It's also about patience. A lot of firms, especially small firms, are trying to be everything to everyone. And that can sometimes dilute the message. If you're committing to expanding in a niche and serving it relentlessly, I think you'll stand out and eventually won't be judged on that budget. You'll be competing on your reputation that you've built through all of your outreach.
Yeah. And a phrase I coined a few years ago, almost by accident, but I said that small firms and individuals have to do three things. The client wants to know, do you understand my world? Do you speak my language? Do you get my problems? The smaller firms can do that because there's a few less restrictions. They're a little bit more agile. So great answers. Hopefully we've answered that for whoever put the question to us. Final one, a bit of a fun one, Chelsea. You're looking at the numbers all day. You're probably seeing them in your sleep. Do you dream in Excel formulas? Are you charts? Are you a visual person? What comes into your brain late at night?
Oh my gosh. I wish I could say I dream in some sleek, color-coded dashboards. It's more like Excel formulas chasing me down hallways that never end. Every once in a while, I have a really good day where the pivot tables, they just work just as they're supposed to the first time. But I'd say if Excel had a frequent flyer program, I would have lifetime status.
Wow. Well, it's been a game changer in accounting world. There's so many accountants still. They've moved on from shoeboxes and receipts in small boxes there, and they've gone onto Excel spreadsheets. So it's a game changer, and it'll probably be with us for many, many years. I'm quite a visual person. One of the things I do when I have one-to-ones chats with people virtually is I ask permission to take a screenshot at the end of us both smiling or the room smiling. I sometimes try it while I'm talking to somebody, but their mouth's at a funny angle and my eyes are closed and it doesn't really happen, but it gives me an anchor, a visual point. So yeah, a little bit of fun there. What do you dream of late at night? What's keeping you awake, if anything? This has been the Accounting Podcast on behalf of Inside Public Accounting. If you enjoyed today's episode, we encourage you to share it with a colleague, to share the love, leave us a review, and help us get these conversations into the hands of firm leaders, because they make the decisions, Chelsea, don't they, these leaders?
They do. And they are the ones that we are trying to provide these numbers and narratives to help guide the future of the profession and help guide them in their firms.
Yeah, you should be following. Make sure you don't miss an episode. It comes back to your word you hit earlier, which is strategy. The stuff we're sharing, Chelsea, the feedback we're getting is it's shaping strategy. It's informing decisions. We've got a special interview coming up next time. I am interviewing Jeffrey Weiner, CEO of Markham for more than 30 years, one of the most influential public voices in public accounting. You know that Markham is now CBiz. They've got an amazing story to tell. And he's a good friend of the show, Jeffrey, isn't he, Chelsea?
He certainly is. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
We're going to be talking about what it takes to build a lasting brand. He's got some amazing stories to share about how he advertised on billboards and buses back in the day to get the Markham brand in front of anybody he could, and the hard lessons along the way, and what he thinks the future of the profession holds. You won't want to miss it. Thank you for watching, listening to the Inside Public Accounting Podcast. I'm Rob Brown. We'll see you next time.